Welcome to the Chris Ruggiero Podcast with your host, Chris Ruggiero.
Hey, yeah, that's me. Thank you so much for tuning into my show, where I chat with some of my friends, travelers, entertainers, and other inspiring people who are out living their life, doing awesome things, and they have great stories to share with me and you. In the past few years, I've gotten to know a lot of different entertainers of all kinds. Hypnosis is something that a lot of people don't know a whole bunch about, and I find it very intriguing. One of my favorite hypnotists, by the name of Chris Jones, sat down with me today and talked a little bit about what he does. A little bit about what he does in his actual show, but what I thought is even more interesting is he talked about being on the road and some challenges that he faces on the road, about being away from friends and family for so long. And we also talked about how he faces challenges and how he's created his own life, you know, out of doing something that he really enjoys, and what he plans for the future, where he's going and what he has in store for the world. He has some great things to offer the world, as do all of us. So hopefully you find some inspiration from my friend, hypnotist, and entertainer, Chris Jones.
Thanks for having me over. I appreciate it.
Yeah, how's it going? What are you up to?
You know, looking for more shows, trying to entertain myself, looking for the future, Mrs. Jones.
As always.
My future ex-wife.
Oh, wow. Getting serious there. What are you finished up with college shows now? What are you up to this summer?
I got a few more high school shows, like post-proms, and I'm doing, actually, you would enjoy it. It's a festival, Chocolate Fest, in Burlington, Wisconsin.
Oh, nice.
So I'm going to do four shows a day for 4 days, and the pay isn't wonderful, but there is chocolate, and it's a lot of fun.
Nice. That's outside?
Yeah. And that's hard, doing hypnosis outside, and it's like 85 degrees, but...
Yeah, I was just going to ask, is that a different... How do you have to prepare for something like that? Being outside, I can imagine there's a lot more distractions and things to worry about.
Yeah, we'll get rained out. That happens every year. But it's fun, all in all. So, Atlantic City, tell me more about that and your time there.
This is all about you. But yes, I'm in Atlantic City this summer, doing a show every Wednesday and Friday, which is pretty cool. You know, it's just like a variety show. It's a variety show, a little theater, 150-seat theater. I do 10 minutes, and then there's other acts. It's awesome. It's the dream, man.
That sounds good, yeah.
Yeah, you got to come down.
I need to, because I live in Washington, D.C. when I don't live in Chicago. I live with my parents in either place. A life of an entertainer, living with your parents.
Yeah, or hotels.
Yeah, hotels are much better. I miss hotels already.
Yes, so I wanted to talk. The first thing that I was thinking about when I thought of you is there are, and I, you know, I talk to people and some people ask me about hypnosis because, you know, they know I perform and involved with entertainment and stuff. And a lot of times people say when they hear hypnosis, they're like, oh, that's fake. It's like the audience is in on it and it's just like a bunch of actors. How do you kind of get around that, knowing that probably a good portion of the general public kind of wants to believe that it's not real?
Right. Major thing is when I'm in front of them doing it live, they know that it's their friend on stage, that we haven't set anything up with their friend or they're on stage. And I say, if you don't believe in it, you should come up here, you should volunteer. But the general public will believe what it believes. But when you see it live, you come with a few people and you see your mom, your sister, your girlfriend on stage, and you know that it's real.
So you think most of the time that usually just being there and seeing it, people, that solves most of the problem?
Yeah, when they see it live, or if they would think about it, you know, I'm in a different city every day. Like I'll do Texas one day, then fly to Indiana, do a different show. And they're like, okay, well, how is he getting all these actors to come with him?
Right.
I don't. It's always different with new people.
Yeah, totally.
But I understand the skepticism. Like I told my dad I was going to be a hypnotist and he was like, you can't do that. I said, yes, I can. I promise, Dad.
Right. Because sometimes people think it's some sort of a magical, you're a wizard or something.
I don't know what people think. People are special.
And do you want to, for some people, you know, some people listening maybe have never actually seen a hypnotist live. So it's one thing to say, oh, come see me live. But how about for people who haven't seen it, can you give a little bit of an idea of what exactly, how what you do works?
So hypnosis works by concentration and a daydream. I will say the right words in the right order. And people, it's like guided meditation. I have no control over people. But if I say the correct words with the right order, then they will go in a state of relaxation, a state of mindset before they're actually asleep. That's when the subconscious mind is very powerful and they don't critically think about doing things. It's pretty much the same feeling as watching a movie, like your favorite movie, one of the best movies ever. Nothing matters but watching that reality. So people say, well, can you be trapped? I'm like, no, you can't be trapped in a movie. After 2.5 hours, you snap out of it. Like, it's short term and then it's done.
Right. I always seem to kind of like the analogy that some people use about driving in your car and you switch into autopilot.
Yeah.
Is that kind of an accurate, you know, you're driving home somewhere that you drive every day, maybe to work or school or something. And you just like, you know, 10 minutes later, you realize, whoa, I was just not here.
Yeah.
But you know, you didn't hit anything. You stayed perfectly driving and you just kind of entered this slightly altered state, but you weren't, you know, you didn't lose control of anything.
We call that highway hypnosis, repetitive sight of like the headlights or the paint on the ground that will zone you out. So take out the word hypnosis, just put in zoned in or zoned out.
Right. Yeah, I like that. That makes people a little bit more approachable.
Yeah, it's more trusting.
There was a time, I think it was probably a couple years ago, I remember seeing you posted a photo of it or something on Facebook about some college that was doing protests for your show.
Yeah.
Like
a very
conservative group or something was saying that you were evil and for people not to come to your show. Talk about that.
The school was great. The school was fine. It was a religious college, but someone just thought that if I was a hypnotist, I had control over people's minds. And so I'm at the airport and the advisor calls me, my contact for the show. She says, now don't freak out, but people are protesting your show. And I was like, well, that's awesome. There'll be so many more people there because any publicity is good publicity. And I get there and there are pictures of my face from Facebook and it says, don't trust Chris Jones. Give your mind to Jesus Christ. No one should have control over you. And it was a big, huge thing. I didn't meet the people, but the show was still fine. It was very fun. And I came out to Sympathy from the Devil from the Rolling Stones. That was my intro music. I had no choice.
they didn't really mess you up too bad. They didn't like show up at the show and anything.
No, I was waiting for it. I was like, anytime now. They're going to come out of the bleachers and just stab me with a Bible. Stab them with a Bible.
That's funny. How about going into, without getting too crazy about it or too personal, there's, I think you and I both have a bit of there's people in other entertainers. So there's one thing, you know, the audience kind of, there's some people that are all on board. They love it. Some people who, you know, protest go as far as, so this, I think the range of, you know, audience of people that don't believe. And then to the other extreme of that saying you're evil and you're controlling people's minds and to not be there. And so that's one thing from the audience. Now, I think another challenge that entertainers sometimes face is from other entertainers. I feel like sometimes half of the entertainers are, you know, super awesome. And then there's some who are kind of in the same boat as those protesters, just like being assholes for no reason. Do you face that challenge at all?
Yeah, I think no matter what you do, there's going to be criticism. And I definitely don't have all the answers, but I've had critics both ways saying, oh, Chris, you don't push the envelope, you don't do anything new. And other people say, you know, what you're doing isn't safe. I'm hearing complaints. And I just go, all right, I'm hearing what you're saying. But if I'm doing a lot of shows and I'm getting repeat bookings from the schools that have had me before, something is working. I don't have all the answers, but I'm doing a few things right. Otherwise, I wouldn't be getting booked.
Yeah, and I've seen you do a few showcases and just completely kill it. And then through the grapevine, I see people give it, you know,
yeah,
saying something. I'm like, that was the best hypnosis showcase I've ever seen, you know.
Were you at Boston? Did you see that one?
Yeah, I think that's the one that I'm talking about.
Yeah.
We don't need to get too.
We won't get too technical, but I had a pretty.
If it gets into anything too crazy, I can edit things out.
It was a pretty good showcase for 15 minutes, and the great thing was that if you look at the back of the room, like every hypnotist who performs at college campuses almost was there in the back of the room, and 90% of them had their arms crossed, unhappy.
Yeah. Right.
And that made me feel pretty good because if they're threatened by something new, then they need to evolve, and maybe I'm doing something right.
Yeah, that's a good it's a good way to think about it. How about getting into, so I met you at one of these college conferences.
Yeah, I met you in Pennsylvania, Lancaster, was it? It was
the festival.
The festival, yeah.
Yeah, and that was probably, what, a couple years ago, 3 years ago. And that was right when you were it was pretty much right when I was first getting started. Yeah. And I think it was pretty much right when you were kind of getting in, getting your groove, getting situated. You've since surpassed me in
very debatable.
And you know, you've really taken off. What was that transition like, you know, cuz when I first met you, we were both kind of fresh. We're like, "Oh, what do we do? You know, how is this going to work?" And now you're killing. You're doing what? How many shows a month do you think you're doing on average during the school year?
12 or 13.
12 or 13 a month. And that's crazy.
It's good. No, I don't take it for granted. I think a big part of it is you get what you need in the universe. And my parents, I have to support them financially. And so this is a great job where you can make money if you're prepared and you save and you invest. So a lot of my money goes immediately back to my mom and my dad. So that's nice. But I was the right place, right time. My mentor, Frederick Winters, he taught me hypnosis, and he had so many shows, he needed some help, and I got to be with Bash Schuller. So he went from maybe 300 shows, honestly, some years, to doing 200 and giving me that extra work. I definitely wasn't polished when I first started. But after enough shows, it's getting smoother, and the show is getting more me and not like other people's shows.
Do you think you'll ever find, so that transition of becoming your show, do you think you will ever find your show, or is that something that's always evolving?
That's interesting. I think you go through different phases, like as an artist, as a painter, as a photographer. For one season, you're totally into colors and shades. And another season, you're into water. So I think it always changes.
So I was talking to or heard something about some other entertainers talking about, you know, some people will completely redo their show every year.
Right.
Know, where they need that to be, like, satisfied, to keep themselves satisfied in their art. They need to completely redo that. And then there's other people who, you know, find that satisfaction in other things. Find it through the audience interaction, you know, that it, you can do the same show, but present it new and have new fans and stuff and get that from there. Which side of that do you think you fall onto?
I like a lot of concepts. The simple old-fashioned blue-collar work ethic is, if it's not broke, don't fix it. Yeah. Like, if it's working. But you will always have people at your show who've seen your show before. So you want to do something special for them, make sure like they're in on something unique just for them. But they also want to see the classics. Mm-hmm. Like if the Rolling Stones were playing, you'd want to hear them do their key signature songs. Same thing with the Beatles. You don't want them to do all new stuff from their album. You want to hear the classics. So some of the jokes, they should stick around. You should keep some of the jokes, some of the tricks. Yeah.
Because the important thing to remember is that, like you said, these, you know, some of these people maybe have never seen a live hypnotist or a live entertainer in general. You know, that's where I come from with juggling. Sometimes I'm like, oh, this is same old stuff. And then people after the show come up and be like, that was crazy. I've seen this online or whatever, but I've never seen anyone juggle, you know, 5 feet away from me.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, like, you know, it's so fun to keep connected to that.
Right, exactly. And juggling is great to me because if it's done really well, it is very artistic. And it's just exciting and fun to watch. I think we've all seen a bad juggler before. When you see someone like you who's good and keeps the audience engaged and you don't know what's going to happen, then it's really fun.
Yeah, that's where I was just going to say the same thing with hypnosis, where you said that you don't know what's going to happen. Because, you know, with you, you have your show, but it's really not your show. It's the audience's show.
Right. That's another good point. Yeah.
Where you could do, you know, you're going to get somebody that's just the star every night. That's awesome.
Mm-hmm. And it's crazy. Like, I've met people. I met two people last week on the same day. It was insane. Just walking the dog. And we started a conversation. It's like, yeah, I went to Dominican. I went to Indiana Bloomington. I'm like, oh, I did a hypnosis show there. They go, yeah, I've seen your show twice now. And I'm like, you didn't remember my face? Like,
right.
But I'm a very small part. I'm like the DJ at a wedding. Like, you remember the music, remember you had a good time, but that's probably a good analogy. I'm the DJ at the wedding. I just thought of that.
Yeah, that's a cool thing to think about. Is it's in a way the most important, you know, without it, it's nothing.
Right. It's better than being the priest, but it's not as glamorous as being the best man who does a great toast or the husband and wife. I'm the DJ. I get people moving.
Yeah, facilitating, the ringmaster.
Yeah, so Chris, where do you want to be in the next 5 years?
Oh, you're good at turning these tables back on me.
Only because I want to know where I want to be, and I have to, like, get some guidance. I don't know. Because I see you at this Atlantic show, and your videos just look incredible. I'm like, I'm doing a lot of work, so I haven't edited my videos. Like, that should be my summer plan.
Yeah.
One thing at a time. Yeah. Where are you going to take this? Where do you want to take?
Well, so my show, so I do a mix. I do some of what you do, you know, bouncing around to colleges, which is awesome because I get to do, you know, my own show. So I have a full hour to do whatever I want, and it's great. The one thing that I don't love about that world is that sometimes, and I'm sure you as well as every other college entertainer can vouch for, is that sometimes you show up and there's very small crowds.
Yeah.
Because we are basically we get booked in. The college pays us our fee. We don't need to worry about selling tickets. They're usually free shows. So they if, you know, some schools, small schools, on a Wednesday night, if 35 people come out, they're like, oh, this was a great success. Everyone had a great time. And, you know, for them, it's like, oh, that was awesome. You know, this was great. But for us, we're like, oh, that's not really, you know, probably consider that a runaway success. You know, it's a good thing to experience, and then you get to, you know, you get really good at interacting with crowds and playing for different, you know, kind of customizing what you do for those different crowds. What I love about Atlantic City, where I am now, is that it's kind of more of a built-in, you know what you're getting into every night. It's kind of mm-hmm. that same crowd. You know, I'm not going into a new theater. It's the same theater every week. It's basically this, you know, not the same crowd, but the same type of crowd. The casino crowd is kind of a very, you know, it doesn't change that much from week to week. You don't have that challenge of creating something new. But then on the other side of it is like, it's just like, I can focus on what I do, you know, juggle, interact with the crowd, make people laugh for a few seconds, and then do something awesome. And like, boom, that's what my job is. And I have 10 minutes to go out and do it. You know, it's like, that's my time spot. If I do it, that's awesome. If I don't, like, I need to figure out a way to make it work.
Mm-hmm. I hear you.
So that's what I love. And then back to your where do I want to be in 5 years, I would like to continue on to transition more into this path, like the Atlantic City, like a resident show somewhere. Or even a touring show where it tours as a group. I don't especially like being out by myself.
That's the worst part of a gig. The worst part of it is traveling by yourself. Like, I'm jealous of bands who get to travel with their best friends, but I don't think I could be stuck in a van with four people. And then on the other hand, if you're stuck with one other guy, you're a duo, that's your business partner. That's the person you're stuck with. If you're having a conflict and he can't resolve it, or she and you can't resolve it, you're screwed. But it is lonely to be on the road.
It's like, you know, if you're with someone, it's even if they're just your duo show or whatever, it's like you're dating.
Right, exactly. Good point. You're dating, but there's money involved.
Yeah, really it's even possibly even worse than dating.
Yeah.
Because you have that, you know, you have these artistic things. And how do you deal with that? How do you, you know, being on the road, you're on the road. If you're doing 12, 13, 15 shows a month, you're on the road. That doesn't mean you have half the month off, which a lot of people think about. Yeah. You're only doing 1 hour?
Yeah.
But it's going to take me a day to fly there, a day to fly home. You know, that 1 hour took 3 days of work.
Right. You're only working for 90 minutes. And I'm like, well, yes, but you got to set up. I set up an hour ahead of time. And when the show is over, I usually eat with some students, eat with the people who hired me. I try to go running when I get to the school or the venue. You have a personal life, too. And then they're like, oh, you make so much money. You're like, I have bills, single and self-employed. It's the price of doing what you love.
How do you deal with that, being alone on the road?
Some people drink a lot for that. I'm a big eater. I eat a lot. I probably spend $25 a day on food, honest to God. And it's crazy because it's fast food and grocery shopping. Like, I'll wake up and I'll have a foot long from Subway. I'll have a diet soda. And then I'll go to like a Target or Hy-Vee, whatever they have in that neighborhood. Grab some granola bars. I'll eat those while I drive. And I'll fall asleep eating two salads from Wendy's usually. I just eat. It doesn't sound like a lot, but, you know, $25 a day worth of food every time I perform, at least.
What do you use? How about for connecting with your fans while on the road? What do you use as far as social media?
I'm on Twitter. I don't tweet because I just don't think anything's interesting. Like, my show's interesting because other people are being funny for me. But I don't do interesting things. Like, I woke up, let the dog out, made myself some delicious oatmeal. People could tweet about that, but I would find that very boring. I send photos of the dog, and that's a possibility. But and then the guys who like go to the gym and they take a photo of themselves in the mirror, I'm like, really? Good for you, but I don't care.
But what about utilize it to, you know, interact with your fans? So, you know, you'll do the show, and these people, you know, think you're a star. And,
yeah.
You know, you'll always kind of connect, you'll keep in touch with them in some way.
Cool. Right. I tell them, hey, I love taking photos. I love meeting people. At the end of the show, I'm going to step down here. My name is Chris Jones. Look me up on Facebook. There's no space. That's my fan page. But if you message me, I will friend you on Facebook. I'm, I guess, old school. And I grew up with Facebook, and I like Facebook. And I can see photos and statuses. You can do the same thing with Twitter, but I don't like the term followers, I guess. That's my major hang-up with Twitter. Like, friends! I want more friends. Give me all the friends. Followers. F that. I don't want people to follow me. I'm just a dude.
What a funny thing that you said that you're old school and you like Facebook.
I know.
When did that become a thing?
It's funny, yeah. Like your dad, I don't know about your dad, but my dad's like, you know about this book face thing, the tweets? It's like, yeah, I'm going to message you a Facebook email. Okay, Dad, do that, please.
Do you have any fans or people that you've met that you've especially stayed in contact with or even become actual friends with?
Oh, yeah. One of my best buddies, his name is Rage, R-A-G-E, Rage. And he's just the coolest guy, and he's super chill. There's
best
no
name ever.
I know. There's no aggression in him. He is actually a medical student in Wyoming. I met him in Wyoming, and then next thing you know, he's at another school, and he's like, hey, I transferred, but I'm going to see you again at your show. And then he calls me. He's like, hey, this summer we're going to go to Hawaii. If you can fly down here, you can stay with us for free. And I was like, absolutely. So I met him up in Hawaii. We rented a car for like 4 or 5 days. We did a lot of snorkeling. It was great. We did some zip lining. It was fun. Just five dudes hanging out in Hawaii.
Yeah, that's nice. That's, you know, I think probably part of the reason why a lot of entertainers do what they do is for those, to create those connections and build those fans. And then when it turns into somebody that you actually can do something like that with and be, you know, it's, you're not being an entertainer anymore. You can be yourself is what's
absolutely
that bridge, that gap where you can turn it off and be a real person to them.
And it is hard to turn off. I'll find myself on a first date and I'll be saying lines from my show and they'll look at me and I'll be like, oh, sorry. That was Chris Jones. That wasn't me, Chris.
Yeah, that's interesting.
And no matter, I've never been on a date where I haven't done a card trick or like done a vanishing salt shaker for a girl. Like, there's no way. Like, if you like me, you have to like my magic. If you don't like my magic, that's fine. If you're really hot.
So that's another interesting thing. Does that personality of you, the entertainer, and the person on stage translate to when it is just you and it's a more of a one-on-one interaction?
I don't know. It's, well, I am probably the last person to take relationship advice from. The reoccurring theme in my life is trying to find out who I think I know who I am now, but who I want to be and what kind of woman I want next to me as a partner. Because I'm going to be her partner. She's going to be my partner. And it's like, hey, you're really great. I think you're beautiful. I like your personality. And I'm going to fall in love with you, but then I'm going to go on the road for 150 days and I'm going to miss you really much, like a lot. So should I even try with you now? I go for a lot of walks. That's my idea of a date with a girl, just a walk, and we just see if we get along. Plus, I don't know about you. Do you have crushes on women? Like, you just, oh, if I lived in Alaska, I would totally marry you. Like, if I
didn't, of course.
Oh my gosh. Just so many people you could be compatible with, but you travel.
My biggest thing that, you know, I always get frustrated with, not so much like with girls in particular, but just in people in general, is that I meet people and know people, you know, like you, for instance, I would consider us pretty good friends, but we see each other, what, once or twice a year?
Yeah, and it's kind of fun. Whenever I see you, we pick up right where we left off.
Yeah, and that's amazing. But I just, you know, I have so many, pretty much all my friends are like that. You know, I see them, you know, at, you know, maybe 3 times a year, 4 times a year, because most of them are entertainers or travelers. And, you know, sometimes I think about, what if we were all just like thinking back to being in college? What if that circle of my circle of friends were like buddies in college? We would have like the most epic. You know, and there's something, I guess, to say that maybe it is, there's something special about it because there's that distance.
Right. I hear you.
But then a lot of times, like some days if I'm off on like a Saturday night and I think about, you know, like, oh, all my friends, like somebody, you know, you're out wherever you are in Chicago or out working. I have friends in California, friends, you know, even on the East Coast, somewhere in New York City. And, you know, that's for me the thing that's kind of tough to kind of get through, where I like, you know, how do we, you know, keep those friendships without people just like disappearing?
Mm-hmm. That's a good point. How do you keep the friendships without disappearing? Well, it's a two-way street. They have to know where you're coming from. You have to know where they're coming from. I definitely have lost a few friends who are still good people, but they're like, hey, you just pop in and you pop out. You try to explain that's the nature of this job. But it's still not fair to people. I went 8 months without seeing my mom. And I called her on Christmas Eve. And I got so busy, I forgot to call her on Christmas Day. And New Year's rolled around. She's like, Chris, you don't love me anymore. I'm like, of course I do. You're ridiculous. She's like, you didn't call me for Christmas. You didn't call me for New Year's. You didn't send a card. Now, I'm a guy, so I don't really send cards. But, yeah, we had to have a moment, and I flew to see her the next day. You have to be aware of your priorities sometimes. And it's a lot of hard conversations with family and friends on the road. It's the nature of the beast.
That was what I was going to go into next. If there's been, you know, the standard audience sees, you know, the awesome stuff that we post on Facebook, mm-hmm. and, you know, all those, you know, the best things, and they think that everything's awesome, you know, that we're living the life. They don't see these, like, kind of these. That's one reason why I like to do this, you know, I'm trying to do this podcast to see where it's, you know, see what's behind that, you know, the highlight reel. And right. There's real challenges that that we go through, and, you know, that every, you know, these people that you see are, you know, real people. And I think you kind of already answered it, but I was going to ask if there's been any challenges and things that have come up because you're a performer in your, you know, that interfered with your life. And that's kind of what we just went through, all of that stuff.
I've missed 4 or 5 weddings. And when I say that, I mean, I missed 3 weddings where I was going to be a best man.
Yeah.
And I never have been a best man before. I've had the opportunity, but next thing you know, boom, hey guys, I'm really sorry. I have shows and I just can't make it to the wedding.
You know, because that's legitimately interfering. Like, you know, that's interfering with your life.
And they're like, "Can you reschedule?" I'm like, "Well, no, because there are only so many weekends in a year. You understand? You got married on this day, or you're getting married, and this is the date for the festival, for the carnival, for their orientation weekend, and they can't move it. And there's a contract. Like, the friendship is deeper than a piece of paper, but I have an obligation to be there."
Has that ever resulted in an actual issue with friends?
Good friends, no. Strike that. Good friends understand where I'm coming from. So it's happened a few times, 3 or 4 times, but I'm still friends. Daniel Chow, David Rinaldi, my friend Holly. Like, I've missed some important times in their lives, weddings and such, but we're still friends.
How about for you? Where's your plan now for moving on? So you're killing it right now doing colleges, and that's your main thing.
Main thing, yeah. I want to travel abroad. I want to see if we can do the same thing in Australia, New Zealand. I want to be charming with my American accent in a foreign country.
I don't know if anyone really likes American accents.
I know, it's not. But maybe it can be like a Southern draw. Because like, there are so many horrible shows on television. Like, oh my gosh, let me call someone out right now. The New Jersey Medium, this woman who claims to speak to spirits. Mm-hmm. And that's the name of the show, I do believe. It's like the new, I already forgot what it is. She's from New York, and she's the Long Island Medium, or Manhattan Medium. Anyway, she thinks she can talk to people's deceased family members, which is just complete bullcrap to me. I'm moving on. The question was, where do I want to be? I want to do something good on TV. Like, I wish we had a Mr. Rogers right now. We don't have Mr. Rogers. I'm saying I would love to help with a program to put on the next Bill Nye the Science Guy, the next Bill Cosby, the next Bill Rogers. Or Bill Rogers? He's a runner. Bill Cosby. I want to do some quality entertainment for young people.
Outside of hypnosis?
Yeah, outside of hypnosis.
That's interesting too. So would you be, if you could become, you know, Mr. Rogers or some, you know, Bill Nye the Science Guy, as a, you know, entertaining and educating young people, would you stop doing your hypnosis show if it came to that other thing? Said, you know, you're going to have this massively, like, someone could predict that you're going to have this massively successful show. Would you be able to walk away from your hypnosis?
Absolutely. I believe in the mindset of, in order to be the next thing, you have to be willing to sacrifice what you are now. I didn't articulate that exactly the way I wanted to, but to be the next thing, you have to be able to willing to sacrifice whatever you are right now. You just need to grow. And it's going to take time. Like, you don't just become a butterfly overnight. You have to be a caterpillar, take time, sit in a cocoon for forever, and then you can grow and you can fly.
Yeah.
I want you to fly, Chris. Chris,
I'm flying.
You're
I'm
in
flying.
That cocoon. You need to fly.
This podcast is flying. That's interesting to think about, where there's so many people, whether they're artists or entertainers or just in general, have this one-track mindset where they say, well, this is what I want to be. You know, because we're kind of like, people teach us that, oh, persistence, don't give up, like, focus right on one thing until it happens.
Right. And that then, you can do, we're the generation that says you can do anything you want if you believe in it enough. And that might be true, but is it really true? Like, I believed I was going to be a physical therapist, but I didn't have the desire to put in the hours in the classroom. I switched majors. It's okay to change your mind. Like, I wanted to be an Olympic athlete, and it's okay to change your mind.
Yeah.
You might be able to do whatever you want, but it's okay to reassess your goals and say, well, this is a possibility, but it's not probable. Do you want to take the risk, or do you want to go with something safe? But sometimes you find something that's safe, but is even grander than what you're doing now. Like, we could have a 9-to-5 job, and a lot of people are happy with that. A lot of people love their jobs. I had a 9-to-5 once upon a time, and I loved interacting with people, but I knew there was a lot more that I wanted to do.
You know, we're told kind of that, you know, like I said, focus on this one thing, until keep working, be persistent until it works. And then that's this one track thing that you're not even looking for another opportunity or possible, you know, path to take. And like you said, what if that different path was where you were supposed to, you know, you find that path by working where you are. I love that when people are open to that. You know, I've had the same thing when people are like, oh, is this like, do you want it to juggle for forever? I say, well, yeah, I mean, it works right now, but that's not my
right.
I'm looking for the end result. Like you said, this to inspire children through a TV show or something like that. Like if I could be, you know, a radio host or a, you know, a YouTube person that never juggles and it worked, and I would say, yeah, cool. Like that's, I don't need to juggle. That's like what I do right now.
Right.
Kind of all that I know how to do right now as far as entertain people. But that's not who I am. You know, I want to be an entertainer and someone who brings something to people.
Right. And the important thing is not to sell out, like to keep true to what you're doing. A lot of people make the change. Johnny Carson was a magician who became a talk show host. Steve Martin was a magician who became a stand-up comedian. Jay Leno was a funny comedian who, in my opinion, became rich and a talk show host. Like, I don't laugh at Jay Leno anymore. I think he performs almost more than any other comedian. He does stand up still, besides The Tonight Show. But I don't find him funny. I don't think the jokes work like they should. And Jimmy Fallon, he's coming up. I didn't like Jimmy Fallon's show because he kept breaking character. He kept laughing. But he has a lot of talent. I think his show's getting really, really strong. So I don't know. Tina Fey, her work is always incredible. Her improv turned to Saturday Night Live, and that turned into her incredible impersonations of the presidential candidate, Sarah Palin. And then next thing you know, boom, she's doing 30 Rock and producing TV shows. I guess you got to just keep flying, Chris. Butterfly effect.
We're flying.
I got to peace out. I'm very, very sorry.
Cool.
You want to do a closing thought? What have we learned here today, studio audience?
Yeah, what do you have to tell the... Here's your Mr. Rogers and Bill Nye the Science Guy moment.
Okay.
The children. Tell them what to do with their lives.
I don't think I was special until I left for college. I was a regular high school kid. I went to college. I left my comfort zone. I was one of 80 black people in my university. It was 8,000 students. There are only 80 African-American students. So I had to speak for myself. I had to find my voice. And then I went to grad school. I left, went 300 miles south of there to a new school. And then I had to find myself a new role. I worked at a university. And the moral of the story is every time I had a new job, a new personality, a new persona, I had to travel. The analogy with Superman is this. Superman was not special on Krypton. His country, his world was going to explode. He had to be thrown into a new scary place to be special. So I think that's my advice for people. Be willing to leave your planet and try something new, because then you will be recognized as special.
Wow. Be willing to leave your planet and try something new. What great advice from a great guy, Chris Jones. Are you willing to leave your planet and try something new in your life? Something to consider for us, I think, on a day-to-day basis. So that does it for this episode, number 2 of my show. Thank you guys so much again for listening. That makes this whole thing worthwhile when other people listen to a podcast, or else I could just do it on my own. Let me know what you guys think. If you are listening to this on iTunes, I would love it if you gave me a little rating or even wrote a little review to tell me what you think. I have some cool things kind of in store through this podcast and potentially another podcast, and having ratings and reviews will really help me out. So, catch you later.